Good evening, Lehigh Valley, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is Sally Hanlon. I'm your host this evening, and with me I have two guests that are no strangers to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I have Richard Master, who is chairman and CEO of MCS Industries, and Vince Mondillo, who's producer, director, and writer of Mondillo Productions. Before I allow them to get to the mic, I just want to give you a little bit of background about what they've been doing and sort of the challenge or the crusade that they're on. We first had an interview in April 2016 that focused on the documentary Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point, which was their first documentary, and it discussed healthcare costs, the impact on businesses, working families, and presented the distinctly American drivers of cost in the U.S. healthcare system. And then the solution, which was single-payer healthcare. The second was Big Pharma Market Failure, and that was premiered in New York City in April of 2017, and was also in the Lehigh Valley Film Festival, and won the Best Documentary Award. Both of these are still in circulation. Both of these are on the website fixithealthcare.com, and tonight we're talking about the third, which was just released at the end of April. It's called Big Money Agenda, Democracy on the Brink, and that addresses the dynamics of the healthcare reform gridlock in Congress. So keep your ears posted. We're going to be having a very interesting discussion about what's been going on today down in Washington. Richard, welcome. Thank you for coming back.
It's a pleasure to be here and to have this dialogue with you and the community around us.
Okay. And Vince, good to have you back as well.
Thank you for having us both.
Okay. I want to give a little bit of background of both Richard and Vince and then ask them if there's anything else they want to add to that, just so you know where they're coming from. Richard founded MCS Industries in 1980 when he officially changed the name of the family business from Easton Box Company to MCS Industry. Easton Box Company was initially founded by Richard's father in 1948 as a manufacturer of rigid paper boxes in the apparel industry. In 1980, Richard decided to venture into framing industry, and in 1981, MCS manufactured their first picture frame. They do a lot with the sort of interior design decorating as they're a leading supplier of wall and poster frames, also a top supplier of tabletop frames, photo albums, scrapbooks, etc. And he is a small business owner and has been adversely impacted like the rest of us with what's been happening in the healthcare industry, correct?
Yes, that's correct. It's great to hear my father's name mentioned throughout the Lehigh Valley. Yeah. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And it was one of Richard's trips with his son that brought him into this arena with understanding and trying to figure out healthcare in the U.S. compared to other countries, correct?
Yes. We were in Chile in about 4 years ago. We were being introduced to my son's fiance's parents. My son developed a reaction, an asthmatic reaction to something, and didn't have enough firepower in his inhaler. And we went out to a local pharmacy expecting to pay $45, $50 for the inhaler he's used to using. It was $15. And then
incredible.
I asked for my blood pressure medicine, and they said, "Do you have a prescription?" I said, "Yes, I do, but I don't have it with me." Well, they said, "Well, we believe you. It's $4. So, you know, I was really surprised. And at that point, we took out our little cell phones and started filming something, and we said, "We really have to do something about this in the United States." I came back. I have a long relationship with Vince Mondillo. We started to discuss a modest project to document some things, and we started turning over these rocks and saw the horrific situation that our country is in with respect to healthcare. And began to document that.
That's terrific. And listeners, if you get a chance to look at all three of these documentaries, I think you're going to be very well educated as to what's going on. And Vince, you are in your own business now. You do custom crafted video productions for clients throughout the Lehigh Valley and the tri-state area. You had worked with Lou Rita Productions as a producer, director, editor for broadcasts on the History Channel, Biography Channel, A&E. Wow, you've been a busy individual as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
And so other than your friendship with Richard, was this a subject that was important to you as well? Did you, the healthcare situation?
Yeah, well, I've always considered healthcare to be the number one issue next to the environment. But I didn't really know much about it. I took a typical position of it's a moral human right. Mm-hmm. And I never really got into the economics. And Richard and I were kind of coming from the same place initially. And as he said, when we began investigating, we found that the economics were far more intriguing at the end of the day, and we found that you know, our system was corrupted on multiple levels, you know, purely through economics. And even with his company, when we interviewed one of his employees whose husband was having health issues, even Richard was shocked to find out what the mechanics were and how the economics were working out. So we were thoroughly shocked when we started digging deep into it.
Well, and your research is incredible. When I look at the credits of who all you've contacted in each of the three documentaries, I mean, it's incredible the amount of time that you've spent seeking these folks out, getting them to, you know, participate and be a part of these video productions. So,
yeah, these are the leading influencers about healthcare public policy in the United States. And we present them in a pretty compelling way. And Vince certainly is correct that we're looking at healthcare in its economic aspects. Although certainly we do believe at the end of the day that healthcare should be provided to all American citizens. The issue is how to do that economically, you know, efficiently. And this has led us to the third movie, which is really the obstacles to reform and the special interests that are the hurdles that we all have to jump to get effective legislation
passed. Get proper representation. It's crazy. But before we jump into this most recent one, what's been happening with your prior two? Are you getting any feedback? Have you noticed any changes in any thinking because of the documentaries that have been out there now?
The movies are being seen all over the country. It's okay. Remarkable. They're being shown by reform groups. And even in the Lehigh Valley, we now have, Vince, 600 members mm-hmm. of a Medicare for All task force.
Oh, wow.
That 30 of them are trained and certified to show these our movies and to talk effectively, and we're planning to send those activists out to other locations around Pennsylvania, around the country, to spread the word. We are having some of impact. You know, the recent polls are that 50% to 60%, depending on the poll, of Americans are in favor of a national health care plan like Medicare for All to replace the Affordable Care Act. There is a recognition in the United States that the Affordable Care Act is not affordable, that health care costs are the premium costs on these exchanges is going up at high double-digit rates every year, mm-hmm. and it's just not working. Well, there is something else that will work. And it's called Medicare. Medicare is working effectively, more efficiently, and I think that's the solution that we're proposing, not only us, of course, but, you know, there are two bills in the House and Senate that are gaining more and more membership, 120 members in the House, 17 members, senators now co-sponsoring it in the Senate. So there is real momentum across the country. And I think we're just a part of that momentum now.
And you're helping to support the the research behind that momentum.
Absolutely.
With what you're doing.
Yes.
Now, as I recall, last year, Bernie Sanders had come out publicly and was really trying to push single-payer health care. Is he still engaged in that? Have you heard anything
more?
Oh,
yes. Oh, yes. He has introduced a bill. Actually, I was a spokesman on behalf of the business community at the press conference in, I think it was September of 2016, in which he introduced his new bill with 16 co-sponsoring senators, which he hadn't had before. He had he was
zero.
By himself.
Previously,
yeah. Yeah,
he had zero.
On his own, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And a number of those senators that are co-sponsors are potential presidential candidates. So when we started, the Conyers bill, which has been around for years, had 20 co-sponsors. Nothing in the Senate bill. And now, as Richard said, we're up to 120 co-sponsors in the House. So there is... It's gone from a fringe issue to now taken seriously. And we're actually even seeing legitimate and fair coverage on the mainstream media at times. They used to dismiss it, you know, with cliches. Now they're actually discussing it.
So, and we're probably going to get into this with this third one, but if you have 120 co-sponsors and everything going right, how much longer does it take to get something enacted?
Well, it's interesting that this weekend, or this past weekend, Berkshire Hathaway had its annual shareholders meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And Warren Buffett is outspoken. He's a Democrat, by the way, and he's in support of single payer. He's the businessman who said that healthcare is the tapeworm in the belly of American industry, and that business people should be focused on healthcare rather than taxes as a major competitive threat to them. Well, his vice chairman, who's 91 years old, Charlie Munger, a Republican, this weekend started talking again about healthcare, and he said. And maybe we shouldn't be saying this on a nonpartisan airways, but he said he predicts that the Democrats will win by 2020, both the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and then we're going to have a Medicare for All bill. And then someone said, well, what happens to insurance companies and pharmacy benefit managers? They're also huge in the industry. And he said, they vanish. And he said, I won't miss them. No one will.
Interesting. Now, isn't it Warren Buffett and Jeff Bezos of Amazon and then someone from Goldman Sachs who are trying to form their own?
Yes.
Sort of, and is that a single-payer focus, do you think?
Well, it's a way of doing something outside of the system. They are recognizing that the system, they have a million employees, maybe 3 million total dependents, you know, mm-hmm. that are in their plans, and they are not being served by the traditional insurance industry, they believe. So they want to do something nonprofit on their own. Now, we've responded to that and said, how about Medicare for All?
Mm-hmm.
We did an article that was in USA Today, an op-ed that responded to them. And I think they're really in favor of that, but they're concerned about the politics of it all.
Well, and that's what you're getting at with number three here. So big money agenda, democracy on the brink. Wow. You captured, I think, in that documentary, both you guys, how the average citizen is feeling just that their voice isn't being heard, that things are happening without their greater good being a part of that equation. It seems like you're building up, and what you talk about is just sort of an overall, and I call it a tsunami, of public voice starting to percolate up. Is that correct? How would you describe that?
Well, I think that the public has been aware of the corruption of money in our politics for a long time. And we might even argue that the tsunami was realized in the last election, both with support of Trump and Bernie, oddly enough. But at the end of the day, everyone stops and says, well, what, nothing we can do about it. That's the common thing we hear all the time. And when we make our movies, we always want to provide an answer to that question. We don't want, we're not interested in doing movies that at the end of it, people go home depressed and feeling helpless. So the thing we tried to do is say, yeah, it is a problem. We're going to explain and try to lay out the real realities of the problem, but then the solutions. And in this case, it's not quite like single payer in that you need a, you know, a whole collection of solutions working together. But there's hope. And I think that the protests we're seeing around the country on various issues, people are starting to get active. They're starting to realize they can make change. And, of course, we have those kids down in a high school in Florida.
Yeah.
Everybody's been whining about gun control forever. And here a bunch of high school kids have turned the tables on that. And we think the same thing is possible for money and politics.
Yeah, wow. Well, and I know that one of the areas that you highlight, and it's been a discussion among a lot of people forever, is the term requirements within Congress, especially the House of Representatives. You no sooner get in, and then you've got to be out there campaigning for, you know, your next election in 2 years, which to me seems ridiculous. And, you know, there should be some term limits along with the 2 year. So,
sure.
You know, you talk about that in your documentary. Why don't you share a little bit with our listeners about that role and how important you feel that is?
Well, what we're concerned about is the dependence on money and the obsession with money that politicians have to have in order to perpetuate themselves. I think the number is 4 hours every day that a congressman spends typically raising money. They have to raise $2,500 every day, you know, in order to just be competitive. And then what we see, and for a senator, it's $15,000. And in some cases, these races get so crazy. We had one in Pennsylvania in 2016. Toomey-McGinty race, $160 million was spent in that race. $100 million of it was spent outside of the typical campaign committees. It was dark money. It was corporate financed money. And it drowned out the voice of the candidates themselves. We couldn't distinguish who was saying what. And what the real we could not really evaluate the worth of one candidate versus the other candidate.
Okay.
20,000 advertisements, TV advertisements in the Philadelphia region alone in two months. I mean, we all experienced that. It's a money game, and the question is whether or not we have a democracy, a functioning democracy.
Okay. There's so much to go over here. So we're going to take a short break right now. My guests tonight are Richard Master, Chairman and CEO of MCS Industries, and Vince Mondello, who's producer, director, writer of Mondello Productions. I am Sally Hanlon. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse this evening with our guest, Richard Master, Chairman and CEO of MCS Industries, and Vince Mondello, producer, director, writer of Mondello Productions. We're talking about their third documentary on the healthcare system in the U.S., Big Money Agenda, Democracy on the Brink. And before the break, we were talking about Congress and their approach for what you called in the documentary dialing for dollars, which I thought was very interesting. I had not realized that 4 hours out of a congressman's or congresswoman's day was spent trying to raise money for the next campaign.
Of course, it is outrageous. And then the issue is, who do they represent?
Right.
You know, if they're spending so much time preoccupied with getting money, then of course they have to respond to that money and in policy.
Well, and they may not even be in their seats where they're supposed to be taking votes.
That's correct. They're not doing the things that traditionally they have done, having discourse with across the aisle or with their fellow party members, reading legislation. Many of them don't get time to read the bills that they're
voting on.
Yeah, and
wow.
So it really is bordering on ridiculous.
Yeah. Crazy.
The thing we don't realize is that our democracy has slipped away, not just because of the economics, but because of time. As Richard said, they're not reading bills. They're not attending hearings. They're not going to the debates. They used to spend time in the communal dining room talking to people across the aisle and having friendships. All that's gone. And they're spending virtually every minute that they're not raising money, they're doing minimal work in terms of their job as in Congress. And this is really a taint on our democracy.
And
nothing.
This is the expectation,
yeah.
You know, that they aren't allowed to do this in at the halls of Congress and the office buildings. So they're taken across the street or to a call center that we're all familiar with because, you know, we're all subject to these call centers. And they make calls. They're given a sheet of who to call, what to say, and it starts.
Who gives them that sheet? Who gives
these are the congressional campaign committees, the DCCC for Democrats, and there's a Republican congressional campaign committee, and then there's a hierarchy in these committees. With what we've learned. And major corporations now and executives are funneling money through the leadership on both sides of the aisle. And that perpetuates the leadership. And it causes these major campaign committees to have policies that are not really geared for the interest of the people, but the interest of the money. And so we get that. And what we are concerned about more than just buying votes, it's buying policy. We're seeing major think tanks in Washington, D.C. Receiving huge sums of money, millions and millions of dollars from special interest that skews the policies toward those interests.
And then as a congressperson, if I'm representing, you know, some place in Pennsylvania, I'm not necessarily seeing everything that's important to my constituents because I've got this group that's demanding me do other things?
That's correct. That is correct. And what we're seeing now is a reaction to that. Reaction by young people, by traditional Democrats who are now beginning to recognize there's something wrong with this system.
Yeah.
Let's throw it out. Let's reform it. Let's do some house cleaning on both sides of the aisle. We're really seeing this. There's a tremendous sense in the country that it's the time. And we've had this sense in our country periodically over the last 200 years in the history of our democracy. And the most prominent one that we recount in the movie is Theodore Roosevelt in 1907 getting the Tillman Act passed, which said corporations cannot contribute to political parties or candidates. Well, how about that? And why did he do that? Well, it's because the business interests had dominated policy. And in order to get antitrust legislation, open up the banks, open up the economy, he had to break the link between money and politics. And we saw that after Watergate, where we saw that in 2002 with McCain-Feingold. And then all of a sudden, the Supreme Court comes in with a decision like, Citizens United throws a monkey wrench into the whole darn thing.
Yeah, I was telling Vince before we started this show that I hadn't really paid attention to the small print at the end of some of these ads that are on TV or that I see in the paper, and now I'm seeing that Citizens United in a lot of things, and they really don't represent me, they don't represent my area, they're just representing themselves.
Right.
It's incredible.
These are, four, 501c4 organizations. They're nonprofit, but they're political organizations who are really designed to run independent of parties and candidates' campaigns, but they're really running in tandem. Everybody knows that. The FEC, the Federal Election Commission, doesn't do anything about it. And you see this dark money pouring in, $1.4 billion in 2016, a 5,000 increase as a result, a 5,000% increase since the Citizens United decision. Yeah.
That could pay for single payer.
Yes, it could.
But the thing that people don't realize about dark money is the incredible impact it has on how much money comes in. For example, before Citizens United and before there was all of this incredible freedom for dark money, they had a hard time raising money. Even Karl Rove, when he first started his PAC, he couldn't get as much money as he expected to get. The second that the doors opened to dark money, massive amounts came in because people don't want to be attached to where their money is going. So even in the Lehigh Valley, as we experience these ads with the Super PAC name on the bottom and a one-paragraph, one-page website that means nothing, if you had actually put your name...
Right, to sign your... Yeah.
Sign your name to that piece of literature, think of how many people will be pulling that money back. Yeah. So dark money, people underestimate how crucial it is and how transparency actually cuts a lot of the money from certain sources.
The whole thing with all of our accountability today. We seem to not want to have that accountability. Just slough it off, give it to somebody else, or...
Yes.
It's crazy. Now, yeah. In the documentary, you mentioned one country, and I'm sorry, I forgot. I don't know whether it was in England or in the Scandinavian...
Sweden,
okay. Yeah. Where they don't have any of this campaign stuff going on. Could you share that with our listeners as to what they do there or what the comment was?
Well,
that
the issue is how should campaigns be financed, and one of our spokesmen, Larry Lessig, who is a Harvard Law professor and a very prominent spokesman on campaign finance reform, said he was speaking to the parliament in Sweden, and afterward a legislator came up to him and said, "I've never asked anyone for money. I can't imagine asking someone for a campaign contribution." Raising the issue that, hey, we should have federal financing of elections. And this is not a radical thought in the United States, because we have state financing now in Connecticut. New York is working on a match.
Yeah.
System, Vince,
matching fund.
Where small donations are matched 4 or 5 to 1 by the city of New York, and that raises sufficient dollars to run a campaign. And that allows people of modest means to run for office, mm-hmm. articulate their views. You know, I just sat with a prominent member of the Lehigh Valley community. I can't use his name. But he's been an elected official, and he said, "I could never run. I don't have the funds."
The deep pockets.
He said, "Maybe you can run. Maybe you have the funds to self-finance." But he mentioned when he went around considering a race, the first question was, "Well, how much money do you have? You know, do you have rich friends?" That's what's required in this country.
And that is the first question before any talk about policy whatsoever. If you got deep pockets, we're friends with deep pockets, you go to the head of the pack as far as the party is concerned.
So that gives us a homogeneous group of individuals in Congress, because they're all money people that don't have any idea what those of us that don't have money.
Or they're looking for money. And where do they go for money? They go down to K Street, and the folks are dripping with money, and all they want to do is give it to you, Mr. Congressman. There may be some strings attached. How about that? But
usually are, aren't there?
Always.
Yeah, and so the reason we did Movie 3 is, you know, we have all these people who really are interested in healthcare reform. They recognize that healthcare is eating the rest of the economy alive, that the healthcare budget in the federal budget is like 27% to 30% of our overall expenditures as a country. It's totally ridiculous. We're upwards almost of 1/5 of our economy, where all the other economies, major modern industrialized countries, are spending around 10%.
So
we are threatened economically as a result of this system, and there are solutions. There clearly are solutions.
Okay, and I noticed in your one brochure you provide solutions, and we'll get to that after we get a little further into this. But one of the groups I wanted to talk about, because you do spend some time on them, and again, you know, opened my eyes. I understood lobbyists, and I figured everybody else was pretty much on the take. But when your film pointed out that only 10% are really the ones that are muddying the water or the bad apples, that 90% of the lobbyists really are doing what they're supposed to do, I was surprised.
Well, certainly they are performing a valuable service, that 90%. And it's more and more valuable as the Congress restricts the amount of money that they're paying for their own research and development. You know, which is really a big issue.
That's like
a huge talk
point
about that.
What Richard is pointing out there is crucial, because at one point Congress had a full research access situation, and then I believe it was Newt Gingrich came along and got rid of that. So what happened is when Congress lost their research capability, Where does the research now happen? It's with a lobbyist.
Oh, my goodness.
So even though you might feel good about the 90%, and we do, that 90% of them are doing clean lobbying, there's still the fundamental source for info for Congress. That's now how the research is done. It's like you invite a lobbyist in, and they go through their talking points. If you're a good politician who's fair, you're going to bring in multiple lobbyists from multiple sides. Needless to say, that does not typically happen.
Well, you don't have the time because you're dialing for dollars.
That's exactly the
And
other
many
point.
Of the bills are drafted by lobbyists,
That's
by
right.
lawyers who work for lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there is certainly another government that we're not electing that is very influential on our life.
Yes.
Our lives.
Yeah, they're literally at the table writing legislation. And the other thing we discovered that we were not aware of is the power of committee chairmen. They draft the legislation. They maneuver pieces through Congress. They decide whether it's going to go out to the general population of the Senate for a vote. So a lot of what happens in lobbyists and money and manipulation is behind the scenes. And as Abramoff, the major lobbyist said, I'd rather have 5 people in Congress or the Senate that are working for me full speed ahead on what I want than 100 members that have committed to a vote for what I want. So that's a lot of what's happening, is they're paying for access to get to the head of the line, to have a seat right at the table as legislation is being written. So it's not so much persuading politicians to vote against their own beliefs. Even Abramoff said that's like a waste of lobbyist time to try to convert somebody over.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to harness the people that agree with you and get them to put you at the head of the pack.
And to be a lobbyist, is there Is there any requirements? Is there certification? Is there a license that you have to have to be down in Washington to do this?
To our knowledge, no. You do have to register.
Yeah. Okay.
There are registration requirements, but that's about it.
So there's no minimum, maximum contribution requirements, or there's nothing regulating them as far as lobbyists?
Just the registration.
Just the registration.
There are, I think the number is, 10,000 lobbyists operating in Washington. Mm-hmm. The cost is $3 billion a year, and we're talking about 20 lobbyists for every member of Congress. So they're around.
And would the majority of this 10% and the majority of the money be related to insurance, pharma, medical?
A lot of it is. It's pharma alone in the last 10 years has spent $2.5 billion by itself. Just pharma for lobbying, just lobbying. Now, let's look at what they do in the United States. A lobbyist can raise funds for a politician, for a member of Congress. They can, what do they call it, Vince, when they...
Bundle. Money.
Yeah, they bundle the money. They have cocktail parties. They may not be able to take a congressman out to a show, but they can fund a major cocktail party and raise $100,000, $2,700, $550, $400 a shot, and bundle these contributions and give it to the congressman. And we see that.
That's incredible.
It is.
You know, and as you said, you know, to take them out to a ball game and a hot dog, they'd be prosecuted because it.
Yeah, they made that illegal to clean up the mess.
Yeah.
While they can raise hundreds of thousands for their campaigns. So we've shifted.
They're needed. Yeah. They are needed because the party can't raise enough money.
Yeah.
And so they introduce, actually, freshman congressmen to these lobbyists because freshman congressmen come in with a deficit, major campaign deficit, and the leader of the party says, you got to do something about this. You know, your seat is now important to our majority, and so you've got to start raising some money. Get serious about this.
Wow. Let's talk about this a little bit more after we take another short break. Boy, I don't know. We could go on all night with this. My guests tonight on Lehigh Valley Discourse are Richard Master, Chairman and CEO of MCS Industries, and Vince Mondillo, who is producer, director, writer of Mondillo Productions. I'm Sally Hanlon. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and our guests this evening are Richard Master, Chairman and CEO of MCS Industries, and Vince Mondillo, producer, director, and writer of Mondillo Productions. We're talking about their third documentary on the healthcare system in the U.S., Big Money Agenda, Democracy on the Brink. And before the break, if you weren't with us, we were talking about the role of lobbyists and the situation where the majority, 90% of them, are doing what they're supposed to do. 10% are perhaps weighing in a little bit too heavy. And the impact that they have on funding, you know, our Congress folks, and then the influence that they're having as well. If you haven't had the time to read about it or see it, listeners, you need to go and see this documentary. It is incredible. It's on fixithealthcare.com. But one of the things I wanted to make sure we covered was something that's on everybody's agenda today, and that's the opioid crisis, because I think you start that documentary talking about the opioid crisis and the cost of it in the healthcare reality. So let's share with our listeners sort of the perspective that you had with that and the importance of it.
Yeah, well, of course, it's a crisis. 200,000 Americans have died from opioid abuse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's three times the number of deaths from the Vietnam War, if you think about
really?
That.
Really? Wow.
And it's 50 to 60,000 deaths every year. And the odd thing, and I shouldn't even call it odd, it's the horror of this, is that the DEA has been working tirelessly to investigate. What they are finding is that we have these drug mills in small towns, like in West Virginia, major problem, on major thoroughfares, and they're seeing millions of pills flowing into these drug mills. Corrupt doctors writing prescriptions, these pills being written, and the prescriptions and the pills ending up in major metropolitan areas via our superhighways, you know. So that, you know, and so the DEA was running raids and doing investigations, and the industry responded. And in 2016, last year, they got a bill passed that restricts the ability of the DEA to mount investigations and gain convictions. It was an outrage, and many of the members of the staff resigned, retired. 60 Minutes did a major piece, and I think in October of 2016, everybody should try to get that on their internet. And what they showed was that the industry mounted a major lobbying campaign, spent over $100 million.
Pharmaceutical industry.
The pharmaceutical industry did it, big pharma, and were successful in lobbying, and then they had targeted contributions with major leadership, and they were successful in gaining a reduction in the standard of proof to mount these investigations. It was an outrage.
Yeah.
Now, the current attorney general is concerned about it and wants to that law addressed. Everybody is making statements about it, very similar to the statements they're making about the cost of pharmaceuticals. Oh, it's outrageous. But is anyone really bringing this out on the floor for a vote? No.
And that's because they're being backed by these concerns.
Yes, there's a lot of lip service to these issues, but very little to vote on.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a problem.
Yeah, every time we end up in situations like this, there are hearings, maybe hearings, and there's all of this hoopla in Congress. But at the end of the day, nothing ever gets done. I mean, it's the pattern. You know, the drug price situation, we could have drug price controls by changing two sentences in the Medicare Part D.
That's right.
But it doesn't get done. And the reason, and Richard mentioned the $100 million they spent on lobbying. If you think about it, $100 million is cheap. They get billions.
It's chump change for them.
It's chump change for them, and they get billions of dollars in return. And this is why, you know, we'll get to solutions later, but public financing, complete public financing of our elections, as in no outside money, would be the best investment we could possibly make, because the government and our population loses billions and billions of dollars that various companies and, you know, industries gain in terms of tax cuts or beneficial legislation.
Okay, so let's talk about solutions, and the top one being what you just said, Vince. You know, how do you go about doing this? Just from a swell up from the bottom? How do you restrict?
Well, if you look at lobbying, you know, South Carolina has enacted some legislation that provides that a lobbyist cannot give anything of value in terms of dollars, gifts, or services like bundling campaign contributions. They cannot. They can provide information. They can influence and be as persuasive they can verbally, but they cannot make tangible gifts. That would go a long way. The other thing with lobbyists is that we see revolving door. We see a lot of people going into Congress, and it becomes a training session to be a lobbyist. Mm-hmm. All right, we're in Congress. We know we have all these relationships now, and we can go out and get 7-10 times the earnings of, you know, representing industry.
And there's no time lapse. I could leave my seat in Congress today, and tomorrow I could be a lobbyist.
We saw that with the passage of Medicare Part D, the prescription drug law, where a member of Congress left after he led the campaign to get this passed, left midway in his term, became the lobbyist for pharma, and made what did he make? $14 million over a period of 5 years. Yeah. Billy Towson, out of out of Louisiana,
and something like 30 or 40 members and staff people also immediately left and got jobs.
Yeah,
in fact, Abramoff said, all that you need to do is promise somebody a job, and now you have them in your pocket until they're ready to leave. And now he said, not only will they do what you want, they're sitting around trying to figure out things that they can do for you above and beyond what you want, because you're going to be their next employer.
Or how to get everything written so it allows them to do what they want to do.
Yeah. So if we had a five-year waiting period for a lobbyist and make the change, that could work.
Well, we've got that in industry. You know, you can't go into a competitive situation. Usually there's a non-compete.
Yes, that's right. How about that?
Yeah.
We didn't think of that. We should have used that, Sally. There should be a non-compete.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's crazy. Well, if we wanted to have the raising and the spending of money in elections limited, do we start on the state level, like South Carolina, and try and get all the states to have it? Is that how you sort of build that base?
I think you can do it both in the state level, and we've seen it in the state level. And there have been attempts to do it in the federal level. I think even the first President Bush introduced a bill, or tried to encourage a congressional elections to be in part financed federally. I think that would go a very long way.
Certainly level the playing field.
Yeah, so if someone gave $50 and that meant that it would be $250 in another $250, so it would be $300, that becomes a reasonable contribution for a congressman to try to get. And it would refocus the congressman to raise money inside his district.
Right.
How about that?
And talk to his constituents.
How about
constituents?
That? Yeah.
Yes.
They'd spend more time talking to us.
Wow. Okay, now you say here that there are 17 legislators that have passed resolutions and 21 states in the process regarding this.
Well, this would be to form a constitutional convention.
Oh, okay.
I think in part, it would overturn Citizens United. It would give Congress the right, responsibility for the raising and spending of money in federal elections. It's that simple.
Okay.
Because Congress periodically does the right thing. Congressmen don't like this. They don't like the rat race that they're in.
The courts have really been a major player in this. And when people toss around ideas about the importance of the Supreme Court, campaign finance reform is one of the prime examples of how they have a direct and massive impact on this. They essentially gutted McCain-Feingold. Mm-hmm. They came up with this notion of money as free speech and unlimited and Citizens United. So we have a scenario where even if Congress wants to do the right thing, you have a Supreme Court, the way it's currently constructed, that is most likely going to undermine any serious and radical attempt. Like, for example, if tomorrow the public rose up and the Congress went along with it and they decided to have 100% public financing, all private and corporate money out, court would be in there and cut that down immediately.
They would say that is a violation of free speech.
That's right.
Yeah. So there is reasonable debate on both sides. But if we provided for sufficient funds through the government to run for office, you would cut out, I would say 75-80% of the influence. Yes, we might have a Toomey versus McGinty race where $160 million is thrown around and 100 of it is wild outside money, corporations screaming at each other. But I think that would be the odd situation. What they found in Connecticut when they had state financing of state elections is that 70-80% of the legislators said, yes, of course I'll do that. I won't have to waste all my time raising money. I can actually knock on doors, talk to voters, and do my job.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Sorry, I get overly enthusiastic.
Well, Vince, you had mentioned a website before the show that would possibly help our listeners understand who's financing what. And could you explain that website, the opensecrets.org?
Yeah, opensecrets.org is connected with,
The Center for Responsive Politics in Washington. Great organization.
This is an amazing resource for voters. And what they do basically is they track all the money, where it's going to, where it's coming from. So you can, for example, check out your local congressperson or senator, find out exactly where all their money is coming from. Now, of course, they can't necessarily deal with super PAC money, which can be dark, but you can still get a sense of where they're getting their money. So it's a great tool for transparency. And when we're in a political campaign right now, and anybody that's, you know, either running now or has run before, just think you can find out exactly where their sources are. So this, and one of the people that we interviewed, Charles Lewis, who is one of our major investigative journalists, they tracked money for 20 years. And what he said was, it's no surprise that in every case, you'll see why that particular legislator introduced the same bill 20 times, you know, in 10 years. It's a cliche, but follow the money.
Yeah.
This website allows you to follow the money as a voter. So if you think your local congressman is a nice guy, sometimes you'll be very surprised at where their money is coming from.
Or if you think that their record is skewing one way or another, you might be able to determine why it seems to be that way.
And we should say that we do have some highly principled congressmen and senators who refuse to accept money from certain sources and are relying on small contributions, et cetera. I think, as in general, what we can say also that's positive is, if given the opportunity, I think Congress would respond with progressive legislation on this subject. I think it's issue number one for them as well.
Yeah.
And the reason we did this movie is because we're not going to get healthcare reform that we want unless we address issue one, which is money in politics.
How does one go about having a constitutional amendment or something? I mean, you've got to have what, majority of the folks in Congress want to do that? How do you propose to do that?
There are several ways, and I'm not a constitutional scholar, of mounting of a constitutional convention. I think you need 60 or 70% of the Congress voting for something like this, and you need a certain number of state legislatures petitioning for a constitutional convention, and then there has to be a vote of the state legislatures. I wish I could speak more authority about it.
Yeah, okay. We can't get discouraged by that. I mean, that is a major hill to climb. But one of the things we're trying to deal with in this film is that there's an array of things that can be done, and all of them at the end of the day matter. Because we got where we got in these little increments, all these pecking away to get to the situation we're in now, which is out of control. And again, if you look at post-Watergate, there are a lot of good reforms that came out of that. If you look at McCain and Feingold before it got gutted, that was a good thing. So I think there's enough political energy in the air on this issue that we may be able to make some breakthroughs.
Okay. Well, we're getting very close to the end of the show, unfortunately. And I do want to ask you what's next. You've already started planning number 4?
Oh, yes. We're not going to stop. Number 4 is a relook at Canada. You remember from seeing Fix It Healthcare at the Tipping Point that we took several trips into Canada, but we want to be a little more efficient ourselves. So this will be a 5 to 7 minute piece, and the working title is 10 things that commercial insurance companies want you to believe about Canadian healthcare that aren't true. We may say ain't true. We'll see. Which is more.
Which works and comes through.
Right.
Yeah. I can't thank you both enough for, again, spending some time to, not only do the documentary, but to help our listeners understand more about the things that are impacting them with healthcare and where the problems are, and providing solutions, which I think is just so critical because, everybody can raise their hands and discuss, but we need to be able to start walking towards something.
Thank you so much.
And you have a quote here that I want to end the show with, which is, America will never be destroyed from the outside. If we falter and lose our freedoms, it will be because we destroyed ourselves, by Abraham Lincoln. How true is that by what we've just been discussing today? So on that note, I just want to, again, thank you both. Vince, thank you for being here, giving the time. Richard, thank you as well. This is Sally Hanlon. This has been Lehigh Valley Discourse.